In December 1890, U.S. soldiers opened fire on a group of Lakota at Wounded Knee Creek, killing over 150 men, women, and children. For generations, this massacre has been portrayed as the symbolic end of Native American freedom, the final tragic chapter in a doomed story. But what if that narrative is fundamentally wrong? What if, instead of an ending, Wounded Knee marked a painful transition in a story that continues to unfold? The massacre occurred after the U.S. government violated the 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie, encouraged settler encroachment, and funded the destruction of buffalo herds at a staggering rate of 5,000 killed daily. When the Ghost Dance religious movement emerged as a response to these desperate conditions, the government's violent suppression culminated in the Wounded Knee tragedy. Yet despite this devastation, Native America didn't vanish. It adapted, resisted, and persisted. This history isn't about extinction, but about the remarkable resilience of peoples who refused to disappear, even when America's most powerful institutions were determined to erase them. Long before European contact, North America was home to sophisticated civilizations with distinct histories, technologies, and social structures. Archaeological evidence from sites like Meadowcroft Rock Shelter in Pennsylvania suggests human habitation dating back 19,000 years, challenging the simplistic theory that North America was settled primarily by wanderers crossing the Bering Land Bridge 10,000 years ago. Most indigenous peoples see themselves not as migrants, but as people indigenous to this continent, with origin stories rooted in specific places. When Europeans arrived, they encountered not a virgin wilderness, but lands that had been carefully managed for millennia. The colonization that followed wasn't simply a binary struggle between Indians and settlers. Disease, starvation, and displacement created complex conflicts along multiple vectors. Previously distinct cultures merged together as remnants of decimated tribes banded together, forming new tribal identities like the Seminole and Creek. Even when southeastern tribes adapted to European ways, becoming agricultural, developing courts and legislative systems, this did nothing to protect them from land seizure. Thomas Jefferson secretly planned to push tribes into debt to force land cessions, while Andrew Jackson openly defied Supreme Court rulings that affirmed tribal rights. Not all tribes accepted displacement passively. When the government attempted to enforce the fraudulent Treaty of Payne's Landing in 1835, Seminole Chief Osceola responded defiantly, "I am an Indian. The white man shall not make me black. I will make the white man red with blood." Seminole warriors ambushed an American column, killing over 100 soldiers. Though the government captured Osceola through a treacherous flag of truce, the Seminole continued their resistance from the swamps. The Second Seminole War cost the government $60 million and ended in stalemate rather than victory. Native peoples developed various survival strategies. The Dine, Navajo, endured 5 years at Bosque Redondo, the suffering place, before reclaiming part of their homeland. The Pueblos preserved their village, ceremonial, and political structures despite intense pressure. Even in California, where state militias pursued Governor Burnett's War of Extermination, Native communities persisted by adapting traditions, forming new alliances, and selectively incorporating American cultural elements while maintaining their core values. The 1871 Indian Appropriations Act reduced tribes from sovereign nations to state wards. The Bureau of Indian Affairs expanded rapidly, growing from 108 employees in 1852 to 2,000 by 1888, establishing bureaucratic control over Native lives. At agencies, formerly self-sufficient people stood in line with numbered tags for basic rations. The Blackfeet in Montana, once sustained by bison, were reduced to eating tree bark to survive. Education became a primary tool for cultural destruction. At Carlisle Indian School, Richard Henry Pratt implemented his philosophy of "kill the Indian, save the man." Children were forbidden their native languages, stripped of traditional dress, and forcibly barbered. Luther Standing Bear described the physical torment of Western clothing, noting how trousers restricted breathing and leather boots caused pain. Within 10 years, nearly 20 government boarding schools operated alongside numerous religious schools with mandatory attendance. The 1928 Merriam Report revealed Indian children in these schools died at 6 times the rate of other American children. The 1887 General Allotment Act, Dawes Act, fragmented Indian lands into individual parcels to dismantle tribal unity. It introduced blood quantum for tribal enrollment and was plagued by corruption. The 1906 Burke Act accelerated land loss through fee simple patents, imposing tax obligations on competent Indians without proper education about taxation. The impact was severe. Indian land holdings plummeted from 138 million to 48 million acres between 1887 and 1934. Though Indians served in every American conflict since the Revolutionary War, most remained non-citizens until 1924. The 1928 Merriam Report revealed devastating conditions, poor health, and incomes far below white Americans. The Indian Reorganization Act of 1934 attempted reforms by ending allotment and supporting tribal self-governance, though it often imposed Western structures on traditional societies. Post-war, federal policy reversed dramatically. Arthur Vivian Watkins championed termination policy through House Concurrent Resolution 108, misleadingly called the Act to Free Indians from Federal Supervision, which aimed to end tribes' legal status. The government pushed Indians toward urban centers, and by 1970, half of all Indians lived in cities, the largest demographic shift in a century. This urban migration and the civil rights movement sparked the rise of Red Power and the American Indian Movement. Their revolutionary premise was that being Indian was inherently valuable and that disenfranchisement was unacceptable. Their activism, including the 1973 Wounded Knee occupation, highlighted reservation corruption and treaty rights. President Nixon ended termination in 1970, declaring it wrong and clearly harmful. The modern tribal renaissance began when Helen Bryan challenged a 148 tax bill on her Leech Lake Reservation trailer home in 1972. Her Supreme Court victory affirmed tribal sovereignty, leading tribes to test their newly recognized powers. The Seminole tribe's successful defense of high-stakes bingo operations established a legal foundation for tribal gaming, which by 2009 generated over $26 billion annually, surpassing Las Vegas and Atlantic City combined. Today's native activism focuses on cultural reclamation. While native languages have declined since 1492, with only 20 projected to survive into the 22nd century, revitalization efforts are growing. Over 40 tribal colleges now teach native languages alongside standard curriculum. In Minneapolis, Sean Sherman, the sous chef, creates authentic indigenous cuisine that demonstrates the continued vitality of native knowledge. The story of Native America isn't a tragedy, but one of resilience. Not the act of dying, but rather the radical act of living. Modern Native communities are young, growing, and increasingly interconnected. Between 1990 to 2000, American Indian income grew 33%, poverty decreased 7%, and Indian-owned businesses increased 84%. College enrollment doubled over 30 years. This living history isn't just vital for Native peoples, it's crucial for America's understanding of itself and its founding principles of rights, power, and justice.